Hello, my name is Professor Smada Rosenzweig. Welcome to Torat Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. Today we will be studying Sefer Iyov, Perek Yudalad, Chapter 14. To sum up last class, Iyov wants a dialogue with God, not with the friends. He wants to plead his case. Verse 23. He wants God to tell him his sins and not hide his face from him. Iyov still hopes to have an audience with God. He is not satisfied with the friends as intermediaries. Iyov feels they are not representing God's words loyally. They are mouthing platitudes about divine justice to falsely find favor in God's eyes. Do we have a right to find answers when we are suffering? Do we have a right to question, why did God pick me and not anyone else? Or should we accept it? Or do we have a right to ask? Verse 1. Adam yelud isha ketsar yamim usva roges. Man has such a short lifespan and is born from such lowly material. How can you judge man so harshly, asks Iyov. Just life is a punishment enough for man. Verse 7, again Iyov speaks to God. Ki yesh la'etz tikva, imikaret ve'od yachalif, ve'yonakto lo techdal. Trees have hope. If you cut them down, they blossom and grow branches, but man dies and perishes. In my son's backyard, a dead-looking tree stump started producing offshoots, and this year it produced beautiful magnolia blossoms, and not even once. But when we went down in the summer, it was blooming again. But man, says Iyov in verse 14, will man live again? Verse 15, call out and I will answer you. Tikra v'anochi e'enecha. Lema'aseh yadcha tichsof. Iyov is crying out to God to reach out to him. Reach out to me, God. Because he yearns for his contact, to feel God's presence. Right now, Iyov feels that God is just focusing on his sins. Even mountains and stones produce dirt that harbor growing seeds, says Iyov. But when man dies, nothing is left of him. His death is final. And Iyov, as in all the other chapters where he speaks, is still yearning for death to take him. Iyov feels there is only darkness. What about people in the Holocaust who felt only darkness? How did they survive, have hope? I will read the first story from my mother, Dr. Yaffa Eliach Alea Shalom's famous book, Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, to try and find out what gives hope to man and a will to live in the direst consequences. Hovering above the pit, it was a dark, cold night in the Yanovska road camp. Suddenly, a stentorian shout pierced the air. You are all to evacuate the barracks immediately and report to the vacant lot. Anyone remaining inside will be shot on the spot. Pandemonium broke out in the barracks. People pushed their way to the doors while screaming the names of friends and relatives. In a panic-stricken stampede, the prisoners ran in the direction of the big open field. Exhausted, trying to catch their breath, they reached the field. In the middle were two huge pits. Suddenly, with their last drop of energy, the inmates realized where they were rushing on that cursed dark night in Yanovska. Once more, the cold, healthy voice roared in the night. Each of you dogs who values his miserable life and wants to cling to it must jump over one of the pits and land on the other side. Those who miss will get what they rightfully deserve. Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. Imitating the sound of a machine gun, the voice trailed off into the night, followed by a wild, coarse laughter. It was clear to the inmates that they would all end up in the pits, dead. Even at the best of times, it would have been impossible to jump over them. All the more so on that cold, dark night in Yanovska. The prisoners standing at the edge of the pits were skeletons, feverish from disease and starvation, exhausted from slave labor and sleepless nights. Though the challenge that had been given them was a matter of life and death, they knew that for the SS and the Ukrainian guards, it was merely another devilish game. Among the thousands of Jews in that field, in Yanovska, was the rabbi of Bluzhov, Rabbi Israel Spira. He was standing with a friend, a freethinker from a large Polish town, whom the rabbi had met in the camp. A deep friendship had developed between the two. Spira, all of our efforts to jump over the pits are in vain. We only entertain the Germans and their collaborators, the Askaris. Let's sit down in the pits and wait for the bullets to end our wretched existence, said the friend to the rabbi. My friend, said the rabbi, as they were walking in the direction of the pits. Man must obey the will of God. If it was decreed from heaven that pits be dug, and we be commanded to jump, pits will be dug, and jump we must. And if, God forbid, we fail and fall into the pits, we will reach the world of truth a second later, after our attempt. So, my dear friend, we must jump. The rabbi and his friend were nearing the edge of the pits. The pits were rapidly filling up with bodies. The rabbi glanced at his feet, swollen feet, of a 53-year-old Jew ridden with starvation and disease. He looked at his young friend, a skeleton with burning eyes. As they reached the pit, the rabbi closed his eyes and commanded in a powerful whisper, "We are jumping." When they opened their eyes, they found themselves standing on the other side of the pit. "Spira, we are here! We are here! We are alive," the friend repeated over and over again, while warm tears streamed from his eyes. "Spira, for your sake, I am alive. Indeed, there must be a God in heaven. Tell me, Rebbe, how did you do it?" "I was holding on to my ancestral merit. I was holding on to the coattails of my father and my grandfather and my great-grandfather of blessed memory," said the rabbi, and his eyes searched the black skies above. "Tell me, my friend, how did you reach the other side of the pit?" "I was holding on to you," replied the rabbi's friend. It is a very powerful story. It helps us at least think of the catastrophe on a personal level, on the level of human suffering, and try to understand what was really pushing individuals to survive. Viktor Frankl describes in Man's Search for Meaning how during moments of the bleak Auschwitz reality, when it was cold and dark, he imagined himself lecturing in a warm, well-lit room before an audience seated in a pulse comfortable chairs. The imaginary lecture was the psychology of the concentration camp. Each person has the special human capacity to preserve a vestige of spiritual freedom under the most difficult physical condition and stress. Everybody picked their way in their spiritual life, their physical life, their mental life, in order to take that strength to survive. It still is a wonder that these people had the wherewithal to really keep that spark of humanity in them and survive. Thank you for studying together Le'ilui Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Zvi Yosef. Next time, we will study chapter 15.